It's Christmas, the time of miracles, so be of good cheer.
Ho, ho, ho.
And welcome to the Deuce Podcast. I'm Brad.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we are doing our holiday movie.
Oh.
Hey-o, episode 37.
Is it really 37?
It's episode 37 and our third in our holiday movies.
Ooh.
We are doing the pre-9/11 movie Die Hard 2. Die Harder.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so I never knew that it had the Die Harder part.
Right, because when the credits come up, they don't say Die Harder. It just says Die Hard 2.
Yeah, all I ever see is Die Hard 2.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was something after the fact that they added, but Amazon definitely says Die Harder.
Right. It's also the only Die Hard movie with a number in the title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which one? Wait, what's one's three?
Die Harder, Die Another Day? Or no, that's the fourth one.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it doesn't have Die Hard 3 in it.
Doesn't have Die Hard 3?
No, but I'll look that up. Go ahead.
So, this movie is, in fact, a Die Hard movie. It's actually based off of a book.
Called 58 Seconds or something.
58
like?
Minutes.
58 Minutes?
Okay. I don't think has anything to do with Die Hard.
Well, trust me, this was not 58 minutes. This was almost two hours.
No. It was over 2 hours.
Was it?
Yeah, it was over 2 hours, just slightly. And this movie, you know, I think was very divisive. I think there's a lot of people who could take this one or leave this one.
Die Hard with a Vengeance?
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah. I think that people could take it or leave it because it's kind of all over the place. It doesn't have the same feel.
Kind of, in a way. Yeah.
I don't know. The stakes feel different. It almost feels like... And it's just a whole different feel from the first one. So I think a lot of people are like, wait a minute.
We're still set at Christmas.
Yes.
We are in Washington this time.
Why? Yep, we are.
Oh, okay. And so, it is snowing galore. Like anything.
And so it's just snow.
It's just snow, snow, snow. There's a lot of snow in this movie. And there's a lot of gunplay and a lot of whatever.
Yeah.
So
it's action-packed.
I'll give it that. It is very action-packed. But we will talk about that soon. But first, after these messages, we'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, tin puff, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
And we're back.
We are.
Yeah.
So make sure you give them a listen. What? Why are you staring at me? Make sure
just
you give
I do
them
that after we play the promo. Yes. I always just stare at you.
You do just kind of stare at me, don't you?
Just to see what you'll do. At least the last couple episodes I have.
So, yeah.
When did this movie come out, by the way?
I know the 90s.
The 90s. Early 90s, right?
Yeah.
I want to say 1990.
I don't know. You check on that.
Yeah.
But they say... They make sure that you know that you're in the 90s.
They say it quite a lot. And the technology of the 90s, they say a lot in this movie.
Yeah.
1990. 2 hours and 5 minutes.
They were only...
So strap in, folks.
They were only 12 months into 1990, and they could not quit bragging about 1990s technology.
Yeah.
It went and a lot
rightfully
further.
Rightfully so, as we're going to find out when we...
There's so much to it that you're like, oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. But so, should we drop it?
Yeah, let's drop it.
Drop it. Drop on the deuce.
So, this movie opens on John McClane's car getting towed. So...
Yeah, like, I thought it was kind of anticlimactic. You know how, like, the heroes of these movies, we always kind of, like, we don't see them right away in these movies? This, we see him right away.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, whatever.
Which it's kind of...
I guess we just jump right into it.
Well, yeah, like, we already have met John McClane. Right. We already have had his kind of introduction.
He's getting a parking ticket.
Yes. Right? He is, but we're so familiar with him, I think, and he became iconic by this point, that to see him having trouble with, like, a traffic cop,
right?
I think is humorous.
Yeah.
But he's getting his car towed.
This hero from the first movie.
Right.
Like, everyone knows, you're John McClane from, you know.
And he cannot deal with this cop who's, you know. Barely conscious. Yeah. So
barely functioning.
Yeah.
Airport cop.
But he's there to pick up Holly from Dulles International Airport, mm-hmm. DC. But the cop isn't cutting him any slack.
Or slack.
No slack.
All over it.
No slack for John McClane.
No slack for you, John
McClane.
Good
Lord.
And a lot of this movie, he doesn't get a lot of slack.
Yeah, he does.
No. Keep going.
It's
like Nickelodeon Gak, right? Is that Splack?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
That's fine.
So he is trying to plead with him and saying, hey, look, it's Christmas. I'm picking up my wife. And kind of give us a little bit of exposition why he's where he is.
At least he didn't say, don't you know who I am? I'm John McClane.
Right. And I don't think he wants to either.
No.
Like, that's... not what he's about. And there's several times where he's just like, meh. Like, he is trying to go under the radar. He wants just to be a normal family with Holly again.
Look, he's unbreakable, but he doesn't want everyone to know he is. Oh, wait, that's a different movie. Different Bruce Willis movie.
You're thinking of Disney's The Kid.
I am. I'm thinking of Disney's The Kid. Yep. Check that one out.
So, this next sentence is going to sound ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
So John McClane gets a page and leaves to go find a phone bank to call.
Yes.
To return the call.
Keep in mind, it's the technology of the 90s, and we are promoting the technology of the 90s. Holly even says, you should embrace the technology of the 90s.
Yeah, and he talks about that a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, he doesn't really want to get with the times. He thinks it's too high, too technologically crazy at this point.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
But he has the pager.
These beepers are out of control.
Yeah, he has that beeper in case she needs to get in touch with him. She just keeps spelling boobs across the display.
She figured it out. She knows how to do that. gets his attention.
Why does she keep paging me? Was it 58008?
She's like, I'm on flight 8008. I'm letting you know.
This might be even before, like, LOL or any of that
it's
stuff.
It's way before LOL.
Well, I don't know. Maybe, you know, like, elite hacksaws were doing
stuff. I didn't
stuff
laugh out day. Loud in this movie, but, you know, whatever.
Nobody did. So, the TV shows a news piece in the background about this guy, General Esperanza.
General Esperanza.
And there is, this exposition going on on these TV that is playing in so many places. It's playing in the airport. It's playing in the hotel rooms. I mean, it is playing everywhere.
Yep.
And so we're meeting a bunch of characters while that's happening. So, as the exposition is going on, showing Esperanza, we come to, I think, what's a hotel room.
Yeah, I think so.
And we see a William Sadler, if you're not familiar, Death from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Yes. The father from What is that show?
Wonderfalls.
Wonderfalls. Oh, yes. Love Wonderfalls.
He is doing some sort of like
nude
naked,
yoga.
Yeah, like naked karate in his room.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but.
And if that really is William Sadler, the guy is ripped.
I don't think it's a butt double.
You don't think it's a butt double?
No.
It probably, like, he seems like somebody who would really put the effort in for that.
Probably. I don't know. Probably. He seems like it.
But you never really see William Sadler's body in anything. He probably is jacked.
Probably.
For it to be a physical actor.
Yeah.
So anyway, he's doing naked karate while they are continuing to talk about Esperanza. Basically, again, drug dealer, drug dealing general.
Right.
Warlord who is being extradited to the U.S. And so we're trying to get him here. And they even say this will score one for the war on drugs.
Right.
Or like the first...
Right.
The first real arrest in the war of drugs.
William Sadler's character is our Hans Gruber, in a way.
Yes. Yeah. His name is Stewart. Colonel Stewart.
Yeah, Colonel Stewart.
Yeah.
French Stewart.
Colonel French Stewart. Wow. Esperanza.
Esperanza. I was in Inspector Gadget 2. Go ahead.
Well, you can't get...
Colonel French Stewart.
Colonel Stewart gets a call, and you see him leave the hotel room, and as
he's fully clothed, yeah,
and then he's carrying like a case, and as he exits, two people are leaving from either side of the hall and kind of forming up behind him.
Right.
So obviously there's some sort of organized force.
Yeah.
Like
a Wes Anderson walking end credit.
Except the music isn't so good and it's not so...
and it's not
It's not so charming as it is. Just kind of like, oh yeah, you're supposed
to be
that guy.
It's not so Life Aquatic-y.
Yeah, right. So, and they head off to the hotel elevators in silence, nobody talking.
Right.
It's early.
Why would you do that?
Because
we have a big plan.
Start talking, Colonel Stewart's just going to start talking about his naked Tai Chi again, and nobody, he's going again.
Oh, there he goes again about his naked yoga.
So,
look, it relaxes me.
Look, all I'm saying is...
Before I become a terrorist, it relaxes me.
So McClane calls Holly back because he got that page to go call her.
Yeah.
On his beeper.
Boobs.
Boobs. 911 boobs. So he goes to call her.
Yeah. So he finds the nearest pay phone.
Yes. Which they're all clogged up with like people. So he finally finds one. And he calls the air phone on the plane that's in the seat back. And they're, like, marveling at about how expensive that must be.
Ooh.
So it is the 90s, after all. So, of course, he calls her on this air cord phone. And some old white lady praises technology, saying...
She praises it. I love technology. Your husband needs to get more into technology.
Yeah. Yeah, and it keeps coming up. Everybody dogs on him about
it. He's an old woman, what I say, and I'm not trying to be racist here, but she looks like white Madea.
Yeah.
She really does.
Yeah,
she's kind of a Bedinsky. She's in,
she's a total Bedinsky.
She's a Bedinsky. But she flashes her best technology.
Well, she says, technology's great. I used to have to carry around mace everywhere I went.
Right.
And now... I carry this and, like, you know, lights up a stun gun.
I don't think that's what, like when we think of, like, modern technology, we don't think the stun gun instead of mace.
It was pretty hip tech at the time, though, because think about, like...
It's not like the stun gun, like caused the mace, like, sales to go down.
Well, no.
Like Napster.
No.
And music.
But think, now it's been prominently featured... In Die Harder, and Batman Returns.
True. That is true. And both are around, you know, a little later for Batman.
It's a sign of Christmas.
Don't tase me. Don't tase me, ho, ho, ho. Don't tase me, ho, ho, ho.
Don't tase me, bro.
Ho, ho, ho.
And she tells Holly, tried it on my little dog. Poor thing limped for a week. Like, didn't know what it was going to do to your dog, but...
Just realize, and I knew her name was Holly, but, like, Holly, like, you know, Holly, Holly.
Like Holly Christmas. Jolly?
Yeah, Holly Jolly.
Perhaps.
Yeah, that maybe.
Jolly's her sister. So, John almost runs into Colonel Stewart. And when, of course, when he gets to him, he goes, wait, do I know you somewhere?
And he said, let me drop my pants. Maybe you know that that ass.
Let me back this ass up. No, but he goes, you've probably seen me on TV. And John goes, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And so they just go their ways, their separate ways.
And when William Sadler means he's seen him on Moonlighting.
That's true.
Yeah.
So now...
Some fly by night. Some fly by day. Moonlighting strangers.
Ooh.
Who have met along the way.
I'm just going to let you finish.
Well, go ahead.
All right. So a van pulls up.
And the girl in that, like, Moonlighting, she did Parmesan cheese commercials. Remember that?
Really?
Yeah.
Did she?
And then the guy was Booger from Revenge of the Nerds. But anyway, go ahead.
So a van pulls up to this church where we kind of get more expository dialogue about Esperanza. People just will not shut the hell up about him. And so they said that he seems awfully chipper for somebody who's under arrest. So you kind of get this feeling like he might be in on something here.
Right. Zibbity-doo-dah. He's whistling.
So, like, and he's, like, waving to people as he's being escorted to this plane that's going to take him to the U.S. There's, like, a caretaker of this church who's watching all this on TV. And he gets the knock on the door from the men in the van. And they say, they're, like, dressed in, like, utility worker clothes. And they said they want to go check on some of the wiring. And so... When they get inside, they shoot the caretaker, and then the men radio into Colonel Stewart.
Right.
Now, Garber tells Colonel Stewart, one of his soldiers, tells Colonel Stewart and some other men that they're in business. So the plan is...
business. God, because they're in a church.
You know? Yes, they are.
A very rundown church, by the way.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of like this old neighborhood church that...
Okay.
He even comments that the parishioners, like, it's getting shut down soon, nobody would notice it.
Yeah.
So John McClane watches Colonel Stewart's men and Garber kind of acting suspicious across the way with this package.
Right, they're at, like, a...
They're like in the airport bar.
Bar, whatever.
Yeah, where everybody's smoking out in the open.
Like Bruce Willis is smoking like a chimney.
Everybody
again,
is.
not gonna happen nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's doing it out in the open. And there's just people like walking around the terminals like random people.
Yeah. Yeah. Just galore, just randomly walking.
Right. And so he sees him acting suspicious, and he kind of notices it, so he walks over to these cops who are standing at the bar.
No one else seems it's suspicious. Everyone's just walking around like nothing.
Because everybody else is paying attention to their own business,
right.
But he's the only, like, you know, he's a cop, and he's got nerves of steel. And
I know, I'm just saying.
So he goes to the cops at the bar. Turns out it's the cop who towed him earlier.
Oh! So you know what they call that?
Coincidence?
Correct.
So, realizing this guy is of no help, he follows the perps himself.
Right.
So, in the meantime...
These guys are played by... The perps are played by... Did we get the actors' names?
He was... One of them is... Miller is the guy who plays Ben Urich in the Netflix Daredevil movies.
Daredevil, yes. who also directed the movie Glitter.
Oof.
Yep. Yeah. There you go.
And then
that's right, folks. Ben from Marvel's Netflix series Daredevil directed Glitter. Go ahead.
And then Garber is just other dude.
Yeah, just another dude.
So they it's Vondi Curtis Hall.
Yes,
his name. I did write it down. So he's while he's following these guys, we get a glimpse, the first glimpse of just the media circus about this Esperanza thing. It's already Christmas, so it's already crazy. The media in the airport is covering the scene, and they're like anticipating the arrival and the arrest. They're talking to FBI agents or like cops who are sitting there waiting for Esperanza to show up,
right,
to take him into custody. One of the reporters, her name is Samantha Coleman, and she's played by Sheila McCarthy. She recognizes Colonel Stewart.
Okay.
Kind of points out.
I don't recognize Sheila Carlin.
Sheila McCarthy.
McCarthy.
She's been in the Aardvark Adventures.
Oh, yeah.
And Two Drink
she's
Mini Jump.
To Paul.
She what?
Paul McCartney.
Yeah, she looks like Adrian Brody.
She looks... yeah, I guess. Whatever. Keep going.
Not really.
This movie is very anti-media. Did you notice
that?
Well,
it is and it isn't.
It's like Trump's favorite movie. It's anti-media.
But it is, but it isn't. It's almost
like good people on both sides.
Yes.
Bad people on both sides, in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But
it's very hates the media.
Yeah. Well, it always, I mean, when you get Thornburg.
With Thornburg.
Thornburg is that...
Thornburg is like that Thornburg in your side.
But he's supposed to be that sleazy reporter, like the Geraldo Rivera type reporter, where they were just, it was all worth getting sensationalized. Mm. And it kind of marked the end of like,
he's such a
the responsible reporting to entertainment reporting.
The boy with the Thornburg in his side.
So, at this point, Samantha Coleman recognizes Colonel Stewart. And when they go to get a statement, he refuses. Or she says, can I have a word? And he goes, you can have two. Fuck and you. And then one of his guys puts his hand on the camera lens, tells him to get out of there, which I believe is third degree assault, if I remember right.
No, freedom of press.
Well, yeah, but when you put your hand on the lens.
Oh, on the lens.
That's assault.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it's like third or fourth degree or something.
I didn't know that.
Yep. Yeah, you can't do that on
television. Can you throw a paparazzi's camera?
No.
Why not?
Because it's too overly dramatic.
Well, whatever.
So John loses the Merc heading into a back room. So he goes, he can't actually get into the room. So he asks this janitor to let him in and flashes his badge.
He's really relying a lot on janitors in this movie.
He does. It's very pro-custodial arts.
Very anti-media, pro-custodial arts.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he gets this janitor to let him in, and McClane tells him to go get some airport police. So he's walking back through this luggage distribution area. So we've seen it in movies where there's like bags going
the
conveyor belts.
Yeah.
And
they're going like really slow though.
Yeah, they're going very slow.
Yeah.
He sees two men, so Miller, again played by Vondi Curtis Hall, and Cochran,
director of Glitter.
Yep, and Cochran, played by John Costello.
Oh, yeah.
Of Die Hard 2.
Hey, I bet.
And so they're messing with...
We're trying to do a terrorist attack.
Hi. It's John McClane.
What's the name of the terrorists that are at the church? Who? Guess who? Go ahead.
Sorry. Okay, so... Miller and Cochran, they're messing around with the electrical systems, and McClane tries to stop them by again flashing his badge at them, and they open fire. So we get into our first big gun battle.
Right. First of many. I mean, they really upped the ante on guns.
They had a lot of gun battles in the first one, but it felt like very confined. Yeah, in the first it did. One. This is like all over the place.
Yeah.
So Miller and Cochran attempt to get the drop on John, and they shoot a bag that falls and knocks his gun out of his hand. So he's scrambling around for that, but Miller gets over there and fights him then, hand to hand. John finally gets like a bag that fell open, grabs some hairspray, and just sprays Miller in the eyes with it.
They're the worst shots ever.
They are.
Didn't I tell you, like, there has to be a deleted scene somewhere where there's like a passenger that has picks up his suitcase and there's a bunch of holes in it.
It's like,
do you
it's
know
like,
what I mean?
Yeah, it's like they trained like with the Empire for their
yeah.
It's awful. But so they're missing him left and right. He sprays Miller in the eyes with hairspray. Cochran starts shooting at him.
when you said that, I'm just picturing him with like a copy of like a VHS copy
of hairspray.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's just the tape's just spraying
he's
out
just
at
spraying
him.
With it.
He's just rolling the...
Take some Tracy Turnblatt in your eye.
Oh, I'm going to have to reel that up with a pencil for the rest of the day. So he's got that going. Cochran shoots the hairspray can out of his hand and then chases him down because McClane just basically narrowly escapes and starts running up a conveyor belt.
Yeah.
Cochran chases him down, and they wrestle on the conveyor belt. John basically kind of, he sees there's this big roller coming up at the top, which I have no idea what that's supposed to be for.
I don't know what that's supposed to be for either.
Because if your luggage is going through there, is that just crushing all your luggage? Is that what's supposed to
be? Well, yeah.
They're like, as part of our continuing... treatment of your luggage.
Yes.
We're going to roll it through this roller, which will crush it.
We're going to flatten it for you.
Yes. Because we're Delta, and we hate you.
We're going to frame you for murder.
We're going to frame you for murder.
Here, now take this meal voucher.
Okay.
And that won't be the first time that we do John Mulaney.
John Mulaney bits and all this?
Yes, because we are doing Home Alone 2 next. So.
Oh, perfect. So John kind of gets the edge on Cochran. He is holding him down.
Yeah.
And then he
so
just
he's holding that Cochran.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just repeating what you said.
Indeed. And he gets fed into like this roller, and so he gets crushed.
Yeah,
you hear him getting
crushed.
I still do not know what the purpose is.
I don't
is.
Know what that roller was.
Yeah, it would crush your luggage. It makes no sense. Anyway.
Because if it's one of those things where, you know how, like, you see where things get kind of, it's like a buffer.
Yeah.
Where it pushes it and kind of, like, collapses on itself. But
yeah.
It pushes the suitcase through. If that's the case, the body would also just do
yes,
the same
like
thing.
Yes, like, the body is.
Not crush.
Yeah, it didn't get it. But.
Yeah, well.
So Miller, befuddled by not understanding how his friend got crushed by whatever that was, decides, I'm out of here, and he starts taking off. So McClane chases him down on a bicycle.
Yeah, he grabs Pee-wee's bike.
Yep, and chases him down and dives off the bike at him as he rolls by.
He's not even on the bike. He's just like, where he's just like kicks. You know, he's kind of like riding on the pedals, but kicks it.
Yeah.
You know? I'm like, what was the point of that?
Yeah. Drama. Dramatized biking. Anyway.
But it did have a basket. I loved the basket.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, that's manly.
I wish he would have gone ding, ding before he flew off and
ding,
tackled
ding.
It.
That would have been great.
As they're fighting, cop busts in.
Ding, ding, bitch.
Ding, like, ding.
You know, something like that.
Yippee-ki-yay, can you ding, ding, ding. So this cop shows up and draws his gun on John.
Right. With a Sharpie.
Damn, my good deed is done.
Tonight. I don't know why.
So he draws his gun on him And of course, he's like, "Ah, what are you doing? I'm the good guy."
Right, I'm the good guy.
And he goes to pull his badge and realizes he's lost it.
Also, his badge.
So we cut back to the plane, Holly's plane, and none other than Thornburg, played by William Atherton. He plays
the same character in every movie.
Pretty much.
From like Ghostbusters, he plays the same, scummy
sleazebag. Yeah. So he shows up and he's coming out of first class, and apparently he's been bumped from his flight, but he demanded to still be on here.
Right.
Or from his first class seat. So he's up there trying to get first class amenities even on this other seat. And he is just the worst kind of, passenger.
Well, what are the odds of having him on the same flight with her?
Yeah, right?
Do you know what I mean?
You're both heading to D.C. from Los Angeles? Anyway,
okay, sure.
So he's being a colossal douchebag. And he demands to be moved to first class again. So he wants to be back up there. He's mad that he has to ride in coach. And, of course, he sees, they say, oh, well, they're like, oh, yeah, I remember your expose you did. Because he tries the, do you know who I am?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, I remember. You wrote this story, or you did this report, flying junkyards, or airplanes flying junkyards.
What?
He was complaining about planes. And then... stewardesses, floozies of the sky. And he's like, what? Come on, it's just reporting. It's just, it's just a headline. So they decide they're not going to help him. But about that time, he sees Holly, and he says he has a restraining order against her.
Wait, but you're in an airplane. You didn't know she was on the flight. Get over yourself.
Yeah. Right? There's people like that.
Right.
But he's freaking out and saying, I have to be, 50 yards away. See, I should go in first class because I have to be away from her. And so they kind of tell him to get over himself.
Yeah.
The stewardess says...
You're going to stay here and coach and watch Craig T. Nelson do coach scenes. Go ahead.
One time I was on a flight and we
Craig
watched...
Craig T. Nelson was there?
No. Oh. We watched... It was like an endless loop of...
Coach?
No.
In coach?
No. Spin City.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And it was like when Heather Locklear had showed up.
Ooh.
Yeah. It was rough.
Ooh.
It just kept going.
It should have been Wings, because that I could get around.
Yeah, that I could understand. Yeah. But not the other one.
Yeah, Spin City. Ooh. Was that when the guy from What's His Bucket, Charlie Sheen, was on too?
No, it was before that.
Okay.
Just before it, though, I think. So the cop finds out, who McClane is finally back in the airport. He goes, sorry, and kind of gives him his badge and gun back. Reporters rush in and, just start trampling all over the crime scene.
Yeah.
Getting in everything's business. The media's everywhere.
Yeah.
And McClane goes,
way to go, CNN.
McClane is like, what the hell are you doing? They're trashing the crime scene.
Yeah.
And so he wants to see the chief. He says, we got to stop this. So he demands to see the chief. And they go to take him there. Back at the church, Miller tells the colonel the mission was completed, but they lost Cochran. And he was like, well, if your mission was completed, then, it's an acceptable loss. But then he threatens to kill Miller if he screws up again. Puts a gun to his head.
So we know he's a badass.
Yeah, he puts a gun to his head, pulls the trigger, and it just
clicks. Trying to say that he will kill his people in order to...
They're expendable.
Yeah.
So McClane goes to see Captain Lorenzo.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the chief. I'd be like, gumshoes.
Hello, gumshoes. Gumshoes.
Acme. It's Acme Detective Agency, gumshoes.
It's Captain Carmine Lorenzo, played by Dennis France.
Dennis France.
And he's the captain. He's the captain of airport security.
He's also the captain of yelling all his lines.
Oh my God! It's like nonstop.
It's nonstop with you.
So Lorenzo,
McClane, get out of here!
What do you think you're doing? This is blah 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 blah. So Lorenzo refuses to shut down the crime scene because it's Christmas. Great idea. Great reasoning.
But that's always a good reason.
McClane can't get any traction with him, so he takes matters into his own hands. He grabs, and he's like, "Hey, we need to check out who this person is."
Right.
So he doesn't get anywhere. So he runs and grabs some ink and some paper and prints the Cochran's corpse so he can figure out who he is. We cut to the Mercs just looking busy and building equipment at this point because they're building something. We don't know what yet.
Yeah, we don't know.
So then we cut back to Esperanza's plane. And of course, he's a smarmy dictator. He looks
a lot of things going on that are kind of like just like we have too many layers that
yeah
don't really have a great payoff.
We're not getting a lot of story behind a lot of it yet. But we will. It'll get better.
Yeah, 30 minutes into the movie.
Yes, 30 minutes in. We see Esperanza, and he looks like a smarmy douche. He's on the plane. He's like talking with this young soldier who's on there who's supposed to be escorting him. And you kind of get the feeling like he's gearing up to try something. He almost looks like Esperanza, just for if you've never seen this, Esperanza looks like a younger version of the most interesting man in the world.
What was that?
From those commercials? Mm-mm. Dos Equis commercials?
The what commercials?
Dos Equis?
No.
Huh. I'll have to show you those sometime.
Yeah, you're going to have to.
Yeah. But yeah, so he's the most interesting man in the world, but way younger.
Is he Artie, the strongest man in the world?
No, not even close.
From Pete and Pete?
No.
Okay.
Not even close.
Okay, well, I don't know. I'm just never seen the commercial.
So McClane calls Sergeant Owl as Al Powell, played by everyone's favorite Reginald Vell Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
He's amazing.
Complete with Twinkies. And we're talking original recipe Twinkies.
Yes.
You know.
Which,
the good kind.
Which, you know, part of me is the 90s when you're fat guy, Twinkies everywhere.
This was, and obviously this is before Family Matters, because Family Matters came out 92, 93.
So yeah.
So it's before that. And he said that, I read something that a lot of people, when they saw him, would throw Twinkies at him.
Oh.
Which seems really bad, but I guess it's better than, hey, did I do that? You know? So damned if you do or damned if you don't.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'd rather have the Twinkies.
Because then at least you got a built-in snack?
But yeah, that's what I'm talking about, you know?
You don't eat them then, because you're just acknowledging that.
Well, give them to the homeless or whatever, I don't care.
Give them to the one daughter, she gets all sugared up and never comes
back.
And
never comes back, yes.
She just wandered out one day.
Yes.
So he calls Sergeant Al Powell. And of course, he's working a desk at this point, eating some Twinkies. And John asks him to run some prints. McClane says he has a bad feeling about this. And Powell says, you know, that's never a good sign. Because when you have a bad feeling, property insurance goes up. Does he trashes everything?
Dum-dum.
Ba-dum-bum-bum. But he goes...
Oh, I'm so glad you
he was like,
it.
He was like, I'm going to fax you these fingerprints.
I guess I have to use a fax
machine. And he
now.
Circles. He's like, I circled swirls in the fingerprints. Like, he should be able to see, but he's circled in the fingerprints.
Well, okay. Like, I don't... You know, you fax something. I fax something before.
Yeah.
I'm sure everyone has. Like, a lot of times when you fax something, it comes out darker than what it...
Yeah.
Is, right? So I'm just picturing these fingerprints coming out a little bit too dark where you can't really get a good read. on them.
Yeah.
And then he got those fingerprints results back very quickly.
Yes. Well, yeah, the same day.
No, we're talking about, like, the same minute.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, it seemed like it was, like...
Oh,
like,
no, it was shortly after.
Okay, well, whatever.
So he gets, the prints come through, and he's with the like rental car girl at the desk and using their fax machine for it. But she's so intrigued. She's just helping McLean. We flash back to Air Traffic Control, where Trudeau, played by Fred Dalton Thompson, says they need
Fred Dalton Thomas.
They need to start bringing in all these planes.
Presidential candidate
Fred Dalton Thompson.
Fred Dalton Thompson.
So the weather has been the weather outside is frightful.
Yes. And so is the acting inside.
So the planes they sent some away because the weather has closed some other locations. Some they said, hey, we can't take you on. Go to Atlanta, go to here, and, like, direct them off.
Right.
But some have lower fuel, like ones that have come cross-country, like the plane from L.A.
Is
that
like
Holly's on.
The Air Zone or, like, the – I can't remember what the terminology they use. Like, the planes that are in the kind of the – I don't know.
In the outer zone or whatever it is.
The outer zone.
But there's some of them that they won't make it to another airport because they're low on fuel.
That's what they say.
Yeah. And so...
You know, but Boston's just not that far away.
True. Come so, we cut back to Powell, who finally gets Cochran's file. Turns out he's supposed to be dead already. So, he supposedly died in
like
some sort of...
Like 2 years ago?
Yes, like a few years ago.
Yeah.
Died in some, basically, he died somewhere, like, in a helicopter accident.
Yeah, that's what it was.
So, it looks like maybe he's part of some sort of, like, paramilitary group or something, and which is concerning. Why would this guy be here? So, McLean goes to traffic control, and he gives Trudeau the file. So, because Trudeau should be the one in charge, so he gives him the file. We see one of the characters, Burke... who is played by John Leguizamo, a young John Leguizamo, doing some work at the church. And he finishes the work, and he's like, yeah, that's all right, boss.
Yeah, he says one line. His line's dubbed.
It's dubbed. Because I feel like he tried to do voices.
Probably.
I've gotten everything done! It makes, like, weird sense. And they're just like, nah, dub him over with a white guy instead.
No.
So, I don't know the reason for the dubbing, but it is odd. It might have just been general, like they couldn't hear him.
General dubbing.
General dubbing. So McLean tells everybody that this obviously has to do with Esperanza.
Yes.
Just then, all the lights on the runway shut off. So they all shut down. The cables to all the critical systems are shut down. Trudeau, basically, he sends away any planes that he can, but some are just circling. They're low on fuel, and of course, if they don't land soon, they'll start crashing.
You know, when all this happened, I wasn't really too concerned. I just was all, like, waiting for that guy from the airplane movies to be like, oops, I unplugged it.
Sorry.
Sorry. And then plug it back in.
I was waiting for Fred Dalton Thompson to say, what a terrible day to stop sniffing airplane glue.
What a terrible day to get the idea to run for president of the United States. Or take over for Diane Wiest in Law and Order.
So Colonel Stewart calls the tower and gives them instructions. Mm-hmm. He says they're trying to get Esperanza's plane to an isolated runway. Not where they're supposed to pick him up to arrest him, somewhere isolated and far away. If they fly him to somewhere without extradition treaties, basically they're going to lose him because they can't bring him back, so he'll be free. Lorenzo So Lorenzo at this point has already shown up and is just freaking out and screaming at McClane. McClane's trying to convince him, you know, we can stop him. We got to do this. We got to do that. Lorenzo kicks him out. And Coleman, who for some reason just all of a sudden busts into the tower, the reporter.
Yeah.
She's like, care to comment on blah, blah, blah? Just like out of the blue,
runs
inside.
John McClane's here. Care to comment?
And so Lorenzo just kicks them both out.
No, Alicia, get out of here.
And while they're leaving, though, McClane manages to escape, like climbing out of the top of the elevator.
Right.
So he just takes off his own way. But not before... she tells him, oh yeah, something, I saw Colonel Stewart. And that's where McClane realizes who he saw.
Mm-hmm.
That this is Colonel Stewart, who is this like ex-military guy. Mm. So he makes his way to the janitor's room, like through the elevator shaft.
Right.
And there's this creepy caretaker guy now who shows up.
Who's played by Mark Rylance.
Yeah, basically.
Wait, no, that wasn't Mark Rylance?
No, but it was pretty damn close.
But if it was nowadays, it would be played by Mark Rylance. Am I right?
Yes, basically.
It's totally Mark Rylance's character.
Yeah, it is kind of a Mark Rylance character.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
So
he's like the caretaker. He's another janitor.
Yeah.
They're the ears and eyes of this institution.
Well, the other one's just like a custodian. He's the guy making sure like all the inner workings are going.
Okay, but at the end, keep going. But he says something at the end that doesn't make sense. But keep going.
So
I guess he's a caretaker. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Trudeau sends a message to the planes to hold their position, including a British airplane which is being flown by
Mark
Rylance.
Oh no, who is it?
Colmeany.
Yeah, the guy from Star Trek.
Yeah, he was Chief O'Brien on Star Trek.
Chief O'Brien.
Yep, Star Trek Next Generation.
And then
Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine, which you told me about. Yeah.
Yep. I think he's an underrated actor.
I do too. They did not give him enough time on this movie to.
No, they didn't.
No.
No.
I was like, cool, good. We're gonna get lots of him, right?
But no.
No.
But you know how we were talking about like Reginald Vell Johnson. Shortly after this, he starts his career up. I think at this point, Chief O'Brien was starting to show up on Star Trek.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was starting to. And if he wasn't, he might have been bit parts of Chief O'Brien by now.
Probably.
But eventually, he becomes more permanent cast.
I want to say Generation was 91, 92.
Generation was going on in 89, in the 80s.
Was it 89? Okay.
Oh, it wasn't just 89. It was like 88 or
really?
Something. Yeah.
Okay.
That
long?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay.
But... Star Trek Deep Space Nine started in
But don't take our word for it. You know, because George.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Star Trek Deep Space Nine started in 92, 93.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when O'Brien went over to that.
Oh, okay.
And we got that much more of him, which I thought he was fantastic over there.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Yeah, okay.
Anyway.
No, wait, what movie are we doing?
Yeah, so Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And so some officers, Lorenzo calls his guys back and basically calls out his SWAT team that is at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And they are going to go out to this tower that was kind of this tower that the terrorists left open. They're going to go out there. They're going to hack in. And they're going to give a message to say, hey, here's what's going on. We're going to guide you into land, mm-hmm. whatever it is. So they're going to just kind of get around all of this. So they're moving out. They're walking to... they're walking out to the marker. And I think they're going through like a part of the airport that's under construction.
Yeah, something like that. It's construction. They're walking up one of those.
Yeah.
Not an escalator, but kind of an
one
escalator.
Of those like those walkways in the airport.
Yeah, walkways.
Like,
yeah.
That let you walk.
Jetsons.
Let you walk just slightly faster than you did before. And they're there with Barnes, who is one of the technicians from the air traffic control. Like he's like the second in charge.
Barnes! I'm Barnes!
I'm Barnes!
I'm Barnes! We can do this! I know we can! And everyone is yelling in this movie. And the only person who isn't yelling in this movie is that guy from Law and Order.
Yeah, that's
true.
He's
calmer than anything. Well, yeah, I think we get enough.
That might be his yelling.
Yeah,
we don't know.
Give it.
When they walk up and we realize all these workers, they're like, hey, get out of the way. Turns out the workers are actually the colonel's men.
Ooh.
And they open fire on the cops and they're just mowing them down. One of them, O'Reilly, who is played by a young Robert Patrick, gets blown away by McClane after like two spoken lines.
He's taken out. O'Reilly, you died.
He is dead. Anyway, McClane kills one guy with scaffolding, which is kind of brutal. Like the guy is on top of scaffolding firing.
This just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
This whole fight scene.
Well, yeah, the whole fight scene is goofy. But like goofy. When you see it land on him, it's weird because the guy's on top of the scaffolding and McClane is like pushing it over. And so the guy falls first, lands, and then the thing finally tips over on him.
Yeah.
And so he gets crushed. It like lands across his chest, which would be terrible. I just don't know how it happened.
Yeah. And doesn't Urkel get hit in the. Is that his name, Urkel?
Yeah, Urkel gets shot in the arm.
Let's just call him Urkel. I can't
Barnes?
Think of his name. What?
Barnes.
Barnes. Yeah, Barnes. Yeah. I'm Barnes. Yeah. Him. We're going to call him Urkel.
He's part of. He has his own spinoff show from this called Barnes and Noble. he gets shot in the arm and kind of just, you know, gets thrown out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty lame.
It really is. Shit's happening everywhere. It makes no sense. I was like, did all the cops die? Were any of the cops alive?
The bad guys are shooting really fast, missing McClane. They show McClane rolling around, slow motion, hitting all of them.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Yeah. At one point, McClane falls with some scaffolding. His gun lands away from him, and his legs are pinned by the scaffolding.
Yeah.
So this guy is walking up to shoot him. Now, instead of, like, shooting him while you're standing further back, this guy is, like, walking towards him. And McClane's trying to get free. He can't. So he grabs this pipe, hits the switch, which turns the conveyor belt on, and the gun comes to him. At which point he grabs it and shoots the guy.
Yep.
If you saw it even going towards him, wouldn't you just like, oh yeah, maybe I should just shoot him and get it over with?
You know, I said it didn't work. It didn't work.
Right. So then about then the radar installation or whatever it was explodes.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out it was a trap. That was all bait. They left it out there because they knew the SWAT team would show up and go out there. Mm-hmm. And like Barnes, who is like one of their best technicians, would go out there, and then
I can do it. I'm Barnes.
Then they would kill them all, and then that would mean that they couldn't do anything else. Like they'd be dead in the water. So
the only two that survive are McClane and Barnes.
Yes. So the colonel
magically.
Yes. The colonel was pissed that his men are dead. So while he's monologuing about everything, McClane interrupts him. And, you know, because they have a walkie-talkie that they can talk on. McClane interrupts him, and Lorenzo starts freaking out. You need to stand here. You need to do this. Blah, 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 McClane. And he goes, McClane? John McClane from Nakatomi Tower?
Yeah.
So now the element of surprise is gone. And Lorenzo looks like, oop, like shouldn't have done that. So the colonel decides, you know what?
He should have actually said, no, Shirley MacLaine.
She's here. And then Bruce
She's Bones here.
Should have done his best Shirley MacLaine impression.
I can't do one, but go ahead.
Jeremy doesn't have a good Shirley MacLaine. So keep I don't know who it is.
Keep going, Shirley MacLaine.
The colonel shows them that he means business. So he decides he's going to bring one of the planes in. So he basically messes with their instruments so they think they're higher up than they are. So he says, yeah, come on in. You're fine for a landing. So they're following their instruments, but it's off.
But it's off. Like a
and so whatever. They are like diving at the ground, basically. Right.
They're going too fast.
Yeah. And this is a plane, by the way, with Cole Meany in it.
Right.
And so they show, they even say, like, there's 200 plus passengers on this plane. You see, like, children in the cabin and everything like that. So they're like, oh, no, this is going on. MacLaine says he has to do something. So he grabs some, like, acetone and some rags and these pipes. And Barnes helps lower him down, but he sets him on fire and is trying to use torches for visual confirmation.
Yeah, like the air traffic control.
Yeah, trying to just basically give them something to aim at. But it doesn't work. So the plane, it crashes. And it rolls on the runway. It's basically landing gears break off. But it crashes on the runway, slides along the way, and then just blows up into this giant fireball.
Okay, but it was kind of cool.
Okay, here's my thing. They were just talking about how they had, like, no fuel.
Right.
But it exploded with, like, the brilliance of 1,000 burning suns. Like, it was just filled to the brim with fuel.
It is true.
And, like, it was, I was like, but wait, that didn't have that much fuel. Like, they were barely hanging on. Mm-hmm. So it seemed odd to me. It seemed a little overdone. But MacLaine,
well,
of course.
When you put it that way, Shirley MacLaine.
Indeed. I'm Shirley MacLaine. That's my Shirley MacLaine impression.
Shut up and deal.
That's true.
Yep.
Great movie. So MacLaine walks down the runway. He's upset, of course. Now he's kind of in this daze, and he's walking down the runway, and he finds this burned up doll, which I think is when it really hits him that this is, you know, I gotta do something.
Or he never got a doll for Christmas.
Yeah, like he it's wanted. The one he wanted, and it's melted.
He wanted that. Santa did not give him that.
So Trudeau tells the technicians to get him on the radio to the plane, whatever it takes. Like, I gotta talk to those planes. MacLaine, being devastated, he finds out that if he doesn't do something, Holly's plane is gonna go down in 90 minutes.
Right.
That they're low on fuel. So, meanwhile, up in the air, Thornburg and Holly worry about the situation causing them to circle. And you see them watching out the windows. They're like all these planes
that
are like
that seemed kind of
feet from each other. It was like, oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it was very odd. But Thornburg uses his tech, like, as a camera guy or audio technician guy's radio to figure out that they are not getting any kind of communication from the tower
Right.
It's just giving the beacon, like the beeps from the beacon around the outer edge.
Mm-hmm.
Just about then, this, like, counterintelligence platoon just rolls in, like, of military guys, led by Major Grant, played by John Amos.
John Amos. Rest in peace, John Amos.
Yeah. Rest in peace, John Stamos.
No, Amos.
Oh. Can it also be John Stamos?
No, okay. The guy from Good Times.
Right, I know who it is.
Okay.
So Colonel Stewart was, like, one of, like, used to work with Major Grant. So I think, like, Colonel Stewart may have been, like, he's in charge of him. And he said, I'm going to take this guy down. It's got to be me.
He's a traitor.
Yeah.
I'm going to take him down.
So Barnes talks to the other engineers at this point. They're going to use the beacons to transmit a message instead of just those beeps. Like, it can do anything. So we do beeps, but we could change that.
Right.
So while they're trying to figure that out, John learns it's going to take a couple of hours to get Colonel Stewart's codes cracked on the walkie-talkie. They're trying to go through it and figure it out. The planes just don't have the 2 hours, though, to spare. They got less than that.
Right.
So he goes to talk to Major Grant to kind of figure out what the game plan is, and Major Grant just kind of turns him out, turns him away and says, no, you know, we don't need you. You're a loose cannon.
Come on, Lou.
So in the meantime, Barnes figures out how to do the audio.
I figured out how to do the audio.
And so he fills in all the planes as to what's going on. Problem is that technician is listening and he gives the radio to Thornburg and Thornburg hears what's going on.
Thornburg.
Yes. So McClane decides he's going to go where the real power is. And he goes to talk to the facilities guy again. The caretaker.
The caretaker.
Played by
Mark Rylance.
Yes, to figure out.
Was it Mark Rylance? It should have been Mark Rylance.
It should have been. To figure out how to get into that conference room. Like, he's going to try to bust his way into this conference room. And that's when he finds a walkie-talkie with the code still input into it from earlier.
The guy pulled
it off of one of the dead mercs. And the colonel attempts to light up a runway.
If they die, like, on linoleum, is that a mercantile? I'm just saying. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Mercantile. So the colonel attempts to light up a runway for Esperanza's plane. And so Esperanza, in the meantime, you see him strangling that guard, that young guard who is watching over him.
Yeah.
So he strangles him, takes his gun, and you know he's up to something here shortly. Stewart is attempting to guide him in, to guide the plane in. What they don't know is that McClane is using service tunnels to find him based off of where they're saying, go here, go here. He's looking at those service tunnels to figure out where to go.
Yeah.
And I think that's around that time, Esperanza actually starts fighting with the guards, or the pilots, and kills them. But he takes over where to go, like, because he can fly the plane.
Right.
Which is good to know.
But he shoots them.
Yeah, he shoots the pilots and, like, shoots the glass out.
Yeah.
So, like, snow is just flying into the cabin.
Sure.
And he has to be going hundreds of miles an hour. Mm-hmm. But it's okay. That won't hurt your face at all.
No.
He's got a beard. He's warm.
Yeah.
So McClane's on his way.
It's all those drugs.
McClane pops his head out of this grate that's on the runway and starts climbing out right as the plane is barreling down the runway at him. Mm-hmm. And so first, I don't understand, like, it's weird. It looks like he's trying to climb out, but then it looks like he's trying to prop it open. Like, I don't quite understand what his hang-up is, but...
Yeah, me either.
He's trying to get unstuck, because if the plane runs him over, it's either going to flatten him, or if it hits a grate first, it's going to cut him in half.
Yeah.
But he manages to do the John McClane move, which is roll out of the way. Right.
Magically.
Yes. Right before the plane... right before the plane squishes him. So... Esperanza starts getting off the plane, but McClane runs up and hits him.
Right.
He plans on using the Warlord.
Every day is a snow day for Esperanza. I can never say his name.
Esperanto. Yeah, so he plans on using the Warlord to trade for Holly. He's going to use him as leverage.
Right. I mean, makes sense, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Like, the only person who can bring the planes in is the person who wants this guy, so... Right. The bad news is the colonel and his men show up and just open fire on the plane. Esperanza even attempts to shoot McClane, but John shoots him in the arm. While that's happening, though, more men make it on the plane.
Yeah.
And McClane manages to run and, like, hunker down inside of the cockpit.
Right.
Which apparently now has a bulletproof door. I suppose it did before.
I suppose
it was open. Like, you had a guy back there who was not chained down.
Who knows? Anyway. But, like, McClane is stuck in this.
Yeah.
And he's trapped.
Well, the Merc locks him in there. He puts an axe in the front of the door so he can't open it. Stewart and his men go outside and are kind of taunting McClane. And then they start opening fire on the cockpit.
Yeah, and magically they don't hit
McClane. Yeah, and McClane just does, like, kind of hops around.
Mm-hmm. Twirls around.
Yeah, and you see shit behind him getting hit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you see things behind him getting hit, but he's never getting hit by it.
Never.
Never once.
He's unbreakable.
Yes.
Unbreakable.
Unbreakable. It's going to be a fascinating transition. So he's miraculously not hit. Then Colonel Stewart says, "Hey, you have your grenades?
Grenades.
There's three. Each of you should have three of
them." There's, like, what, three of them there? So each
there's
one,
four of them.
There's four of them.
Four
there's,
people. Okay, so each has three grenades.
That's 12 grenades that are going to get thrown at McClane.
And so, so the first one comes in. And it goes, bump, 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 and lands. And it's got this moment where, like, Bruce Willis is, like, mugging at this.
Yeah.
Like, doing his business.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I mean, like, and, like, Hudson Hawk levels of mugging at kind this of, point. Yeah. Where he's like, whoa, the grenade's there. And then more keep falling in, and he's just looking at them all. And after, like, almost all 12 of them have come in, he starts looking for a way out and scrambling around. And he jumps into the ejector seat and straps himself in.
So this all takes a minute.
It takes longer than
a minute.
Yeah.
What did I read that? Like, grenades used to be 7 seconds after you throw the grenade.
Yeah.
It blows up, but that was way too long.
Yeah.
So they cut it down to 4 seconds.
Yes.
There's no way that he should have survived at all.
No. That was ridiculous.
He hits the ejector seat.
Yeah, and so as soon as he flies out of the plane, then the grenades all go off together.
Of course. Pops up in the air.
Yeah.
A la something that kind of looks like a 3D.
It was like a green screen or blue screen thing. Yeah.
At this point of the movie, I swear I'm thinking he's dead.
Yeah.
It's Sixth Sense. He's dead.
Yes.
And he just doesn't know it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's no way he should have survived that.
So apparently he didn't go straight up in the air and then come straight down. He goes off and then, like, flies too far for Colonel Stewart to get to him.
Right.
Because you see him, you see him parachuting down. I guess my other thing was, too, I don't know how high that ejector seat would go, but apparently it was high enough to fully deploy a chute and slow down his rate of descent.
Still not as high as the Warlord. That guy was really high, but go ahead.
Correct. Who, at this point, doesn't know that anything has happened yet. He thinks the in-flight movie. He's just messed up. So then they decide,
Not Spin City again.
They go, you lucky son of a bitch, and then just leave. Like, okay.
Okay, thanks.
Awesome. So back on the plane, people are starting to get nervous. They really are. Like, obviously at this point something's wrong, right?
Well, they're like, come on, this has to be, something's going wrong.
Yeah.
I think the stewardess even notices the light of fuel.
Yeah, she comes in there and they go, oh, everything's fine. Just turn on some TV for them.
Turn on the TV, the tube.
Yeah, they're mindless boobs.
They'll
fall for that. And she goes, okay, I know it'll make me feel better.
Yeah.
And then she sees the fuel light blinking and then goes, okay, and just walks away anyway.
And so she turns on The Simpsons.
Yes, The Simpsons. Anyway, yep.
So she turned on season 3 of The Simpsons.
So, yes, early Simpsons. Probably still like with the weird cartoon sound effects that haven't gone away yet.
Well, from Tracy Ullman.
Yeah. But Thornburg, who is listening to the transmission, gets the idea to call into his newsroom. So he goes and gets the airplane phone. And they said, hey, you need to sit down. We could land at any time. And he kind of is like, oh, I'm sick, whatever, and locks himself in with his phone. Because Thornburg is a douche.
Yes.
Now, Major Grant starts reading McClane the Riot Act at this point. He says he doesn't need a hotshot like McClane around and tells him to get out of there.
We don't need a hotshot.
And Barnes goes to McClane and says, look, if they drove up to get...
They can't be that far away.
Yeah.
If they came up to get him, they can't be that far away.
But it's true. I have these old plans from 10 years ago.
Yeah, he shows. So they redid a lot with the...
Laura, my love.
Oh, my God. They redid a bunch with this airport with Dulles. And they said, well, it used to run through this neighborhood, so it's got to be something over here where they came from. So they go to head out, or they head out to go check it out. Back on the plane, Holly is worrying about whether the plane has enough fuel to keep circling. She even starts to, you know, call it out and realize, hey, something's wrong. The flight attendant says they do have enough fuel, but, you know, they count for all sorts of contingencies. We'll be fine. And it's still, Holly's not really settled about that. So she decides to use the pager again. So she pages John from the air phone.
At the worst time.
Yes. Of course.
Because you're sneaking up.
Yeah, McClane and Barnes are watching.
They found the church.
Yeah, they found the church. They see a sentry who's wandering around outside. And they prepare to move in. Like, they're sneaking up to see what's going on. While they're doing that, John's beeper goes off, which prompts the sentry to immediately just, like, jump him. So they're wrestling around. While they're wrestling around and fighting, Barnes calls Major Grant and tells him what's going on. The major and his men head out, and there's this weird scene where they comment that, you know, hey, we have a situation. And when they say that, all of them pull their masks down at the same time, except for one kid who's still trying to crack the code. But it was just this really kind of like moment where you're going, well, what's going on? Yeah. McClane and the sentry continue to fight. He pulls this like gigantic knife and is trying to stab McClane with it. But John breaks off this big icicle and just stabs him right in the eye with it.
Mm-hmm.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we call a icicle.
An icicle?
An icicle.
Excellent.
Yeah, excellent. Chill.
Chill.
Chill right
here. Icicle. So the military comes in. Finally, and they exchange fire with Stewart's men. And it's weird, like, there's this part where Stewart and his guys, they take off the magazines to their, the clip to their machine guns, which are taped together with red tape, and they put in different ones with blue tape on them. So they're firing back. So it's a big battle. Stewart's men rig the church to explode, like they booby trap it, and then run out the back and grab onto some snow or get some snowmobiles and take off.
Mm-hmm.
McClane
magically just like the way that they were set were right next to each other with their covers on.
The
snowmobiles. It was very beautiful to see that they were organized crime.
It was. It was. They've set this down. This is all very you know, organized.
Of this church that they just, you know.
So
took over.
McClane, who manages to kind of get by where they are when, you know, the other military isn't.
Right.
He manages to kill two people on snowmobiles, and one of them he actually takes their ride.
I think it was John Leguizamo
that he killed.
Yeah.
Okay, probably. Yeah.
Because he said,
wow, my hand, and just makes a bunch of sounds. Yep. And, yeah. So McClain gets into a gunfight. And so he's firing at them while he's, you know, riding at them. And you see Colonel Stewart is just like lighting him up. He's shooting his snowmobile and everything. John is firing right at him and nothing happens, which must be what every other merc must feel like in this movie when they're shooting at John McClane.
Yeah.
More
like the plot, nothing really happens.
But, okay, so even though this is happening where he's not hitting Stewart, and Stewart is still, Colonel Stewart's mowing him down, basically. All these bullets he's launching at them just go into the snowmobile. Mm-hmm. John never gets hit.
Oh, yeah.
Once at all. And so he...
Unbreakable.
So McClane manages to ramp off of over a truck, and then his snowmobile explodes in midair.
Gets off just in time again.
Yeah, and the colonel and everybody, of course, escape. McClane, now, who gently rolls into the snow after narrowly avoiding just yet another explosion, realizes... He's like, I had the bastard right in my sights. I don't get it. And so then he takes a look at the gun, and you can see something's not right. Later, Stewart confirms his plane has been prepared. He says, okay, do you have the plane out there? I need somebody to come out and to confirm all this for me. Grant gets on the horn and tells him, no, check your own plane out, because we're not going to be giving you anyone else who you're going to make into a hostage. And, of course, Stewart and him kind of get into this verbal sparring match, and then that's it. Back on the airplane, Thornburg gets the network prepared to broadcast his report. Thornburg! Grant, now, and all the other soldiers, the good guy soldiers, they're talking, and they said, where were you in Grenada? Or, where were you when we were fighting in Grenada? And he's like, oh, I was only whatever age. And they go, man, I really wish I could have been with you. And he goes, yeah, I wish you were with us, too. And then they just slit the kid's throat.
You know.
Now, there's this little throwaway line earlier that, the first time I watched meant nothing to me. And, of course, in the subsequent watches, I'm like, oh. They say something about, there's nothing to worry about, but there's a last-minute replace personnel change, mm-hmm. and that's what they're talking about.
Gotcha.
You just are kind of like, meh, it doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't really mean anything.
But it makes sense now, because it was this kid was the only one who wasn't part of the crew.
Sure.
So, Thornburg now reports that about what's happening with all the planes. And is going on about how there's terror in the skies and everybody's in danger. Like
causing a ruckus again, Thornburg.
Yeah.
Making everyone just all paranoid.
Yeah, everybody off
freaking out.
Erupts into chaos. Everybody's freaking out. And people start, just smashing stuff in stores. They start just smashing stuff in stores and trying to... just trying to basically do anything they can just to enjoy the insanity. So Lorenzo now at this point is threatening to arrest McClane, basically saying, hey, you made all this happen. You did all this. McClane then says, oh, yeah, I've had about enough of you. Takes the machine gun.
Machine gun, yeah.
And opens fire on him. And he, of course, reacts naturally. He recoils and kind of, tries to defend himself. And everybody kind of jumps back.
Is the reason why he got that gun anyway in there is because everyone was in chaos?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was like, how'd you get that gun even in the airport?
But that's when they realize that this has been blanks. They're blanks in the gun, which means that Grant and Stewart have been working together the whole time. Lorenzo calls all of his forces back in, and they just say they're going to take the hangar by force. The hangar that Esperanza and his guys are in. So now Thornburg obviously is causing this chaos, and they're playing the news on the plane and everything because they have broken into the feed. So Holly, the flight attendant, opens up the bathroom door, and Holly just stun guns Thornburg, like, in the neck. And he just kind of goes like a rag doll in the bathroom stall. Yeah. He's just down. But, yeah, he's a douche, so they took him out. Now, the police cars can't make it out. They're trying to get to the hangar. The police cars cannot get there because all the taxis are freaking out. People are in the way.
Thanks, Thornburg.
McClane, he gets in the car with Lorenzo, and Lorenzo says, "Hey, have you met my brother?" And it's the cop from earlier who gave him the ticket.
Hey, it's me, Meatball.
Meatball Lorenzo.
So McClane, in the meantime, since nobody's going anywhere, McClane has an idea and gets the attention of the reporter, Coleman, who he met earlier.
Right.
So Stewart, Colonel Stewart, Major Grant, and General Esperanza.
God, that's a lot.
I know. All board their plane and prepare to take off.
Start singing Kumbaya.
Yes. And, like, all the soldiers are like, yeah, and they're cheering inside there.
How are all these people, like, they turned bad?
Yeah.
They, whatever.
Yeah, they apparently all turned bad together back in the day.
Apparently there's a lot of moles back in the day.
And so McClane gets on board the news helicopter with Coleman. And his idea is, hey, stop the plane from taking off and get in front of it. And they're like, this giant plane is going to destroy us. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So he says, okay, do this for me then. Let's...
go by the wing?
He's like, yeah, get me over it, at least. While they're doing that, Holly's plane calls in and says, hey, look, we are out of fuel. We're on fumes, so we're going to try for an emergency landing, like, in 5 minutes. Because if we don't, we're just going to drop out of the sky. So back on Holly's plane, everyone is freaking out because they've told them, prepare for, you know, brace for impact for an emergency landing. Thornburg is apologizing to people, and now he's acting scared and, like, the, you know, like a wuss. John has the helicopter lower him over the wing. And when he gets down onto the wing, he jams his coat into the aileron, into, like, the flaps.
Is that what they call that?
Yeah, the aileron.
The aileron?
Mm-hmm. So he jams it in there into the flaps.
Did he play for the Yankees?
Aileron?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, it's A-Rod. Never mind.
A-A-Ron. so he jams it into the A-A-Ron. And,
ooh, yeah.
And,
jam it in that A-A-Ron.
but basically the plane can't take off because it can't get lift to get up now. So Esperanza looks out the window and goes, what the hell? It's McClane again.
It's McClane. He's like the Duracell bunny.
He goes, you guys, what the hell? Take care of him. And so he goes, okay. So Grant and Stewart go to take him out. So Grant gets out on the wing. And, of course, as he's going, he tells Stewart, do not shoot the wing. It's filled with fuel. Like, the engines... The tanks are filled with fuel on both sides.
Right, or Red Bull. Because Red Bull will give you wings.
Of course. And so Grant and McClane fight. They duke it out. Eventually, he pushes Major Grant off the front of the wing.
Mm-hmm.
And he slides down
right
in front of the turbine and gets sucked into the engine.
Sucked in, a la that guy on the pilot of Lost.
Yes.
Get sucked. You don't know. You get sucked up in there. And I'm like, I always feel bad for that actor because I'm like, you're the guy that got sucked up in there on the island. Never were to hear from again.
And they never gave him backstory after that?
I don't think so. I doubt they did. I think you got maybe one other line from him on a flashback.
So Stewart now comes after McClane with a knife. So while he's attacking him, though, while he's attacking him, McClane manages to bite off one of Stewart's fingers.
Yes. I guess adrenaline will do that.
Yeah,
for you.
Brutal. So Stewart goes, oh, it is on.
Right. Well, because Stewart really didn't need his pinky.
Right. So it's on. Now he's going to start doing the like karate again.
Yes. This time fully clothed.
Yeah, he did keep his clothes on.
On
which,
the plane.
Which I think might be where the problem
with
starts.
Red Bull.
So he kicks John off the front of the wing, but not like by the turbine, just kind of by one of the sides of it. And he actually is where he can reach the fuel release, like where they fueled it up. When he falls to the ground, he opens that. So there's just fuel pouring out of the wing now.
Pouring.
And so obviously it's pouring
out
down the runway while they drive. And when he's on the ground, he sits up and goes, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, and just lights the fuel on fire.
Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon, is what the dubbed version was.
Mr. Right. Falcon?
It was Mr. Falcon.
Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
Yeah, yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
Boo.
Thanks, TBS.
Mother, father's Chinese dentist.
Thanks, TBS.
So now, I guess, to me this seems weird, because, like, the plane is going, it is taking off. Like, it is at full speed going to lift off the runway.
Mm-hmm.
And that fire is going faster than it. Like, it's zipping up that line.
How fast does a plane have to go?
So I looked this up. I looked this up.
Jeremy. Okay, you did, huh?
Yeah, because it was really odd to me.
It's bothering you.
Yeah. A plane to take off has to be, a big plane like this has to be going somewhere between 150 and 180 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
So for our our friends from around the world, that is 240 to 285 kilometers per hour.
Oh, kilometers. Crazy metric.
So it has to go that fast to take off, which means the fire is chasing the plane down.
Right. It catches up
that
to
much
the
faster.
Plane.
And even when, so the plane flies up, and I get that it's like, it's catching from, you know, drop to drop.
Right, it's
or
like
whatever.
A domino. The domino.
But it seriously looks like the fire is like, where you think you're going? Whoop! And jumps after it.
The fire jumps at it.
Yeah.
It jumps at it.
So the fire jumps up, and the plane fills with fire and just explodes and keeps exploding. Explodes just as big as the first airplane that landed that had no fuel. So, but basically, bad guys.
If not a little less.
Yeah. Bad guys, all dead.
All dead.
One fell swoop.
Anticlimactic.
Yeah. So now the added bonus is that the fire trail
leaves a runway.
Yeah. It was basically works as like a runway marker. So Holly's plane sees it and is able to land. And all the other planes then are able to follow them down and land behind them.
All 13 planes that are in the sky.
Yeah, because they all, like, none of them need space or to move away.
Yeah,
or
to be on
like
that runway. Yeah. I mean, again, the fastness of planes landing, I'm sure.
Yes.
You know.
So.
Park it over here so we can add 12 more planes.
Yeah. So John runs out, but the plane stops as soon as it lands and lets out the little slides.
Yeah, like right there.
Yeah. So how the hell is you gonna do that?
Right by the fire.
Yeah. So they let them out, and people are, you know, getting off there. John is running around trying to find Holly because he's freaked out. He finds her. Of course, the reporter's like, hey, don't film this. Like, this is, you know, we don't need to be watching this. So, but apparently the caretaker doesn't get take the hint.
No.
And Mark, he rides up like on one of those like airport golf cart things.
Hey.
And he's like, "Hey, get on, hop on the back, you and your lady friend, and I'll take you wherever." Hey. Like, he's just weird.
Your lady friend.
So, and Thornburg is like laying on the ground. And he's like, "Help me up, dear," to the old lady. And she, of course, calls him an asshole and just moves on. But nobody will help Thornburg off the ground. And then Lorenzo shows up and says, "Hey, McLean, I think my brother gave you a ticket earlier." And he rips it up and goes, "Merry Christmas."
"Okay, thanks."
And the end.
No, remember, Holly also says, "Why does this always happen to us around Christmas?
Why does this always happen to us?"
Yeah. And then they embrace. And then you've been deuced.
Yep, you've been deuced.
That was Die Hard 2.
Yes, Electric Boogaloo.
Electric Boogaloo, Die Harder.
No, Die Hard 2, Die Harder.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I enjoyed this movie in the aspect of what the hell's going on a lot. Other than that, I didn't really prefer this movie.
Yeah, so I'm not huge on the Die Hard series anyway, for the most part. The only Die Hard movie
you're
I like...
You're more of an Under Siege guy. I understand.
Oh, God.
I understand.
The only Die Hard movie that I'm just, like, absolutely smitten with is Die Hard with a Vengeance.
The third one.
Yes.
Because it's kind of a riddle, like a
Because
like
it's,
a
like, it's the closest I'm ever going to get to the Riddler.
Right.
And so, to a good Riddler, let me put it that way. But I love that movie. I could watch that one all day or day. And this is... But we watched this one. And I remember as a kid, like, hating this one. And
it
being
feels
like it's that
hard in this movie.
Yeah.
A lot. But we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
That's what we thought about it. But let's hear what other people thought about Die Hard 2. This person is Axel Rhodes. Hmm. Not Axel Rose, but Axel Rhodes. So he gave it an 8 out of 10. Says a solid sequel. Like the Lethal Weapon films of the late 80s and early 90s, I found the Die Hard films to be very satisfying action entertainment. Much seems to be made of this sequel being inferior to its predecessor. But I thought it matched Die Hard for the scale and has some breathtaking moments of action. Bruce Willis is still top form as our hero of the airport setting during the busy Christmas period. Gives the film a positive buzz. Yes. And he says, William Sadler is nothing less bad enough to hate and actually turns out a lot more ruthless than Gruber. He says it's quick-paced. And that Bruce Willis's comic timing and action, he's an action man and has charisma. So that's what he says.
Okay.
So this one is Seed Men, and they gave it a 1 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Says, the facts don't fly and neither does the film. Utterly incompetent script writing does in this dreary action film. The people who wrote the movie know nothing about the real world, so the fundamental source of suspense in this film is based on a lie. The aircraft circling National Airport would have nowhere else to land? It's a typical Hollywood display of contempt for the movie audience, as if there was no airports within an hour of this airport. And additionally, the SWAT team bulletproof vests offer less protection than a wet Twinkie. Ooh, a wet Twinkie that what's his face is eating.
Reginald Bell Johnson.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So there you go. He didn't prefer the movie.
Well, okay, but they explain the thing about why they couldn't fly somewhere else.
Well,
because
that storm had rolled in.
They explained that. I thought he was mad about like the physics of some of that. Like some of the physics were goofy.
Yeah.
But like that made
The physics in this movie are really goofy.
That's one of the few things they actually fucking explain. He's like all down on it. Come on.
Yippee-ki-yay, Seedman. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Falcon Breath.
All right, Falcon Breath and Pizza Bones.
No, what was it? What's he call him again?
I don't know. What are you doing over there, clipping your nails?
Sorry, I had a hangnail.
Hey, come on.
it was bothering me.
You do have five nails. You know what else we have five of?
Questions.
Questions is correct. Good segue.
Yeah, this is a good segue.
That I'm driving on, that I'm riding on.
I really wish you'd stop doing that in the living room. But
that's how I do this podcast, on a segue.
Okay, so what do you think is the best part of the movie?
William Sadler is probably my favorite part of this movie. I think he's a pretty good... He's a villain enough to be in this movie. I think that he's my favorite part of this movie. Other than that, there really isn't a lot in this movie. I really enjoy the technology in this movie. Like the fax machine, the beeper. No. Your favorite part of this movie?
I think this is both a plus and a minus a little bit, but I like that they were like, hey, the first movie was very confined to one building.
Yeah.
To Nakatomi Tower. It was like, where are you going to go? You can't leave the building. With this one, the world was a little bit wider. Like, you could go to that neighborhood where the church was.
Yeah.
And you had all the runways, and you had, like, all the different tunnels in the place, and you had, he was on the snowmobiles doing a chase. There's, like, a lake there and everything, or across the Potomac or whatever it was. But, like, you get, like...
So they got to play around.
They opened the world up a little bit for it. For any video game geeks out there.
Right. It's hard for me not to compare these movies to 24, the TV show, because of the whole terrorist aspect and the whole... Sometimes you watch 24 and you're like, ugh. You do have to have a willing suspension of disbelief in these movies. They are... just kind of for entertainment that you should just kind of...
Didn't you say they were going to try to cross over?
They were. They were talking about when they were going to have Jack Bauer and 24 be a movie, that they were going to cross over Jack Bauer and John McClane and have Die Hard Live Another Day or something like that.
Yeah.
And have that be like they cross over and help each other out.
Yeah.
Which I was like, yeah, maybe.
Interesting.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
So it's for me, it's kind of hard to like not think of that and not think that, you know. But again, even in 24, they're like, we have to go all the way across town in an hour to go save this person.
Yeah.
I'm like, you can't make it in an hour. Come on.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess if you're going to do that, if you're not going to take it serious, and what happens means don't take this movie so serious.
Right.
Be what it is, which is just pure entertainment.
Yes.
Then just enjoy it for what it is. And you can enjoy it. Like, I can sit there and enjoy it if I want to. I just kind of don't want to because I'm just like, that's unrealistic. I can't deal with that.
Oh, no, there are people who are die hard about these movies.
About Die Hard?
Yes. But they're fun movies. This one just is not my favorite. Like,
I feel like they're trying too hard. They're putting too much. They're making it. They're trying to be more big, or bigger. Sorry.
How dare you?
Yeah, sorry. They're trying to be bigger than the first movie.
Yeah.
And for the most part, it just doesn't work as well. So I say it's about the third best Die Hard movie.
Have you seen any of the newer ones?
No. Just the third one.
I've seen Live Free or Die Hard, and that was the one where they went with the PG-13 instead of R.
Seriously?
And like Timothy Oliphant was in it or whatever.
Jesus.
It was a little rough, but it was okay. But it was a little rough.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, would you reboot, continue, or cancel the series?
You first.
I'm glad they continued it because I got the third movie, which is like one of my favorites all time. And, I don't want them to like reboot it with somebody new. Like I'm glad that they started doing them again, I guess, because I feel there's probably stories out there still that this can do. Or that they can, play on with John McClane. But I don't want this to be like a Jack Ryan scenario where now all of a sudden it's Ben Affleck and Die Hard.
Oh, no, I don't. That can't. No, but this is what I want. I think it, and I've told you this, that it should be prequeled, and I want Jensen Ackles to play John McClane.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. From Supernatural, Jensen Ackles. Yes. That would be excellent.
I think he has that dry wit, and he has that, you know.
It really, you don't want it to be Joseph Gordon-Levitt and a prosthetic nose?
No.
Okay.
No. I don't.
It was Rian Johnson's loop.
It was a good Rian Johnson movie, but yeah, go ahead.
Do you think this movie stands on its own?
That's a yes and a no for me. I think the first part doesn't, and once we get more into it, it does, because we kind of forget about all that. Kind of exposition that was part of the first movie.
Yeah.
Because there's just so much convoluted, you know, plot and a lot of characters that we kind of just forget about. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I say yes and no.
I say yes. And
oh, for the most part, yes. It does.
I think it's because, like, and maybe it's just because this is based off of a different book or whatever it is that, that 58 minutes or whatever it's called. Maybe it's because of that, but like, it's like even the stuff that they try really hard to tie into the first movie,
the Thornburg stuff and the,
yeah, the Thornburg stuff, the Al Powell stuff, the constant references to Nakatomi Tower.
Yeah.
None of that stuff actually plays like an integral part of the story. I mean, it does, but like not in the respect of the first movie. Like, if I watched this one, I wouldn't be lost. I would just be like, oh, okay, it's just somebody he knows. Or
no, I would be lost a little bit with the Thornburg stuff and the Holly stuff. I would be lost with that.
Well, we know who Holly is. I mean, he explains that that's
right,
his wife.
But I don't know why that they're, you know, there's a restraining order.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I think it stands on its own.
For the most part, it does. That's why I'm saying. I think at the beginning it doesn't. And then later on when we don't give a shit about the other movie, yeah, it does.
So
I'd say 95.5%.
Okay. Yeah. Along those lines, does this make you want to see the first movie?
Yes.
It does?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't like this movie. Having said that, I like action movies.
Yeah,
I really do. I think Die Hard is, I mean, there's a reason why Die Hard has been copied and copied and copied for years.
Yeah,
because that movie still works. And so I would watch it again.
I put no. Again, I'm not like the biggest fan
Sinner!
Of Die Hard. I'm not the biggest fan of the Die Hard series, but it makes me want to watch the third one.
Boo, I don't want to watch the third one.
What?
Because it's Christmas. I want to watch the first one.
No.
It is Christmas time. That is not a Christmas movie.
They talk about they talk about Jesus in the other one.
It's a summer movie, right?
It is a summer movie.
It's hot and Samuel Jackson's yelling.
Yeah, it's the summertime, and because like they go to the baseball park and everything. Yeah. So, but yeah, it still makes me want to watch the third. Two words. Sum up your experience in two words.
Die soft. It's flat.
Yeah.
This movie is like it's a flat Coke. That's what it is.
Yeah.
The first one was so refreshing. And this one's just so flat, but it's still a Coke.
Can I just say,
full of adrenaline. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Let me tell you what this movie makes me feel like.
Flat Coke. Those are my two words.
Okay. So there's a restaurant here in our town, and if you go there, they have all sorts of sodas. They have Pepsi. They have Sprite. They have Dr. Pepper. They have all these things.
Going?
And so I went, oh, you have Pepsi products. Can I get a Diet Pepsi? And they go, we only have Diet Right.
Oh, okay.
So they don't even carry Diet Pepsi. It's the one, they have Pepsi and then Diet Right. Because people demand Diet Right there, apparently.
What? Who remembers Diet Right?
I don't know, but this restaurant does. But it's that kind of a letdown to me.
What is this restaurant stuck in 1988? And they like they jazzercise? What is going on
pretty
with that
much,
restaurant?
It's pretty much.
I got mad there for a moment.
but it's disappointing. Like, I'd be like, oh, Pepsi products, and start like craving a Diet Pepsi.
Generic.
Yeah, I like, oh, a Diet Pepsi.
Yeah,
and then you get the rug yanked out from under you, and that's what I feel like this movie is.
This movie is still better than the ripoff movies that ripped off from Die Hard.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like the Under Siege, like all.
Oh,
that.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
Not better than Speed. Not better than Air Force One. Yeah, not better, but you know.
So
there's
for my
exceptions,
my two words, I put no longevity.
No longevity.
Because
there's five movies, right?
Well, okay, but this movie does not hold up.
Oh, it does. This movie does not.
Because
hold up. If you were gonna say, hey, I need to watch a movie that doesn't hold up.
Yeah.
Watch this movie.
Because okay, so we even called it out as we watched it. We were like, yeah, that would be solved with like.
Yeah.
Where Al was like, they had to find a fax machine. Oh, or I could just send it to you and you send it back.
There's a text message.
Yeah. Or,
there you go.
Oh my God, how do we get a hold of the planes? We can't get them on radio. Oh, hold on. Let me use my cell phone
right,
to call them.
Right, let me use my cell phone to call them.
And so it was like...
right.
Yeah, it's odd. Like, the technology just does not keep up with it.
Your clearance, you know.
Yeah.
Do you have clearance to go over here? No, you don't. Okay, yeah. We'll pat you down, you know.
Yeah.
Like 9/11.
Yeah,
that's
why
I said, you know.
There's people just wandering everywhere, people walking around. Like, McClane clearly has a gun at one point that he just wandered
just
in there with.
Whips out, like, out of nowhere.
That he brought with him. Yeah, it does not hold up as far as, like, time-wise. I'm just like, oh, my God, that's so weird to see. And, like, it wasn't just one thing. It was, like, one thing after another.
After another.
And then... On top of that, he whines about how technologically advanced all of it is.
That's what's the kicker of the whole thing. I think that pretty much sums it all up.
Yeah, he's just like...
I think what you said just sums it all up. So.
Yes. So, we have gone through this here.
Yeah. Watch the first one. If you want to watch a Die Hard movie... This Christmas season, watch Die Hard
Third,
1.
With a vengeance.
No, 1.
With a vengeance.
1.
With a vengeance.
It's not in Christmas.
It doesn't matter. If you're feeling cold, warm yourself up by watching a lovely summer movie.
Die Hard.
With a vengeance.
Die Hard.
With a vengeance.
1. Okay, well, we are going to continue to agree and disagree. We're going to do that. But first, Jeremy's going to tell you where you can find us.
Yes. You can find us at Stitcher.
What?
Yep. Podbean.
No, my headphones went out real quick.
Stitcher.
What?
You can find us at at iTunes. You can find us on Google Play Music. You can also find us at thedeucepodcast.podbean.com. Or you can find us at Facebook. We have our Facebook page up there. Where we'll post all sorts of fun stuff and talk to people there. If you ever want to talk about like a sequel, like a number two in a series, throw it out there. We'd be happy to talk about it.
Want to be a guest on our show?
Yep.
Hit us up.
Yeah.
Got a suggestion?
Yep.
Hit us up.
Yep. And tell us why you should write a 200-word essay that's called...
First, you want them to watch Die Hard with a Vengeance, and now a 200-word essay.
Yes.
Well, you are clearly in a bad space. You are clearly in a bad space right now.
I'm in the clearest space I've ever been in.
Clearly, eat a candy cane. All right.
Why I should be a deuce guest.
Why I should be a deuce guest. All right. That concludes this episode of The Deuce.
please check out our fourth holiday movie coming up, real quick probably. It is going to be Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
Indeed. So
check that one out.
Yep.
But for now, the sequel is keen.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I've bought some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I hate going out in the storm. But if you really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Finally kiss goodnight. How I hate going out in the storm. But as long as you hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.